when people talk to me about the Olympics and things like that, I struggle even to remember what was it like. It happened so quickly, you know, coming from a state of, would it even happen a year ago, you know? So, yeah, it's definitely been a whirlwind all the way from European indoors in March, where Phil Healy's got a coach, came fourth, you know, just off a medal, and on from there to Tokyo. And I was lucky enough to travel as well as part of the team. So it's definitely been a whirlwind, been an experience, you know. It's been an Olympics like no other, as I say, and I don't think we'll see anything like it again, but I was just glad that I was able to play a part in it, you know.
Played a big part in it, it has to be said, but the Olympics, as you say, probably wasn't as you'd imagine it when you were, you know, a young child looking up and thinking one day I'll get there, but it was a very special experience. Do you have any memories of the games itself that you will take away forever?
Yeah, well, I suppose it was for the 4 weeks we spent in Japan, I suppose it was split in half, you know. The first 2 weeks were probably not as comparable to the second 2 weeks when we went into the village. So the first 2 weeks we kind of spent as one team Ireland in a holding camp. That was nice. It was great to mix with all the other sports people in a kind of a, you know, a safe, you know, relaxed kind of environment while everybody got their got themselves ready for the imminent, you know, entry into the Olympic Village, which was, you know, for many reasons a different vibe. You know, things are starting to ramp up. You're getting closer to competition. So yeah, no, it was just the whole thing was brilliant to meet, you know, so many dedicated coaches and athletes, you know, and the staff behind it that made it all possible, you know.
And that brings up this brilliant image of you just sitting around with other coaches discussing your different ideas and that. So I suppose that must be a really exciting opportunity to just actually get to sit down and talk to these people, whereas you probably wouldn't otherwise.
Yeah, that's it. You have to beg, borrow and steal. And the thing is, most coaches at the top of their game are quite willing to share ideas and chat. And, you know, like this guy I actually went to college with, John Coughlin, ended up in the village coaching Camacho Quinn to a gold medal in the women's 100 metre hurdle. So it's funny, like the people you know from home as well that are involved in athletics at the top level. So even to be able to meet Johnny in the village and have a chat about how he trains an Olympic champion, and, you know, I was lucky to meet Billy Welsh over there as well, and talk about the things that are not just technically related to coaching, more the periphery stuff, you know. Billy's brilliant at that stuff, the stuff that happens in the grey area, you know. So yeah, it's fantastic to be in an environment where people are receptive and open, and it's something that I've been looking throughout my career as a coach, that I've been able to tap into some amazing minds and resources along the way, you know.
And it's helped you be nominated for the European Coach of the Year accolade as well, one of two from Ireland here, and a lot of that is of course down to your work with Phil Healy, and Ireland's fastest ever woman at the minute as well. So tell us the story of how you met back in 2014.
Yeah, Phil, I knew Phil from sort of Munster squad sessions where I was working as a coach, and we used to meet up like once every quarter, things like that. So sort of when Phil finished her leaving cert and was moving into third level, she reached out and was looking, I suppose, for something different, and maybe she, you know, maybe looked at what I was doing with David Hines locally here from Wexford, who won the national championships in 2013, you know, probably as an outside ranked chance there that year, you know. But she probably looked for something different and reached out, and look, it was a remote coaching relationship for a couple of years. Phil was based in UCC, and, you know, we had to navigate a few hurdles. Like, she started off doing nursing and moved into IT when she figured out that nursing wasn't conducive to, I suppose, high performance sports. So yeah, kind of, look, we went on our journey from 2014. There was, you know, some great days initially, then there was, you know, navigating life's challenges, I suppose, brought some, you know, one or two, I would say we didn't have too many bad seasons, but we learned an awful lot in, say, 2015, when things didn't go well for Phil, and sort of forced a mindset shift in my coaching philosophy a little bit as well. And we haven't really looked back since, to be honest with you, you know.
And you were also a promising sprinter in your own career as well. Unfortunately, injury cut you down. How difficult is it to get over, I suppose, the mental side of an injury like that when it does, you know, kind of stop you in your tracks?
Yeah, look, and maybe I was lucky, and I was maybe I was destined to be a better coach than I was a sprinter, so I definitely wouldn't have been in the same ballpark as the talents of Phil. But I do remember, yeah, like, it was, you know, in fairness, it was kind of my groin. It was the main sport. I was, you know, I was vested in it. I was committed to it. You know, I moved to Limerick to college to kind of to make a step up myself. And look, I only lasted 6 months down there, and I got a fairly bad injury. And looking back in hindsight, like, yeah, I was devastated. And I probably wasn't equipped to handle the exit out of the sport so early. You know, and it did take me a while, even 2 or 3 years before I was even able to kind of contemplate coaching in the sport. But thankfully, you know, I got over that, and it's something I'd be very conscious of now in my coaching, that like, do no harm is probably rule number one of coaching, like, you know what I mean, do no harm to the athlete, because some of these injuries can have a devastating effect. And even see it in ball sports, field sports now, like, you know what I mean, that we underappreciate the impact of even a simple hamstring strain, like, you know what I mean, a player can carry that with them for a season, for two seasons, and the best line of defence is attack. So you need to prepare an athlete and players for these type of things as well, you know. Now look, a lot of injuries are, you're going to get them regardless, right? But there's a lot of things we can do, so that's something I would have learned from that, you know. The mental aspect, yeah, like, look, any exit from sport is tough, and I don't think anybody's equipped for it, you know. So a lot of it is just support, and the sport continues on after the end. And even just this week, Sport Ireland have made amendments to the retiring system, which is good to see, that they will fund athletes, you know, for a year or two after they retire, you know, so that there is that financial support there. So things like that do help as well, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to ask you a bit about that later on, but Phil also suffered a pretty serious injury back in 2019, I think, breaking a foot. So as a coach in that situation, what can you do? And, you know, I guess, you know, it brings you back to your experience as well of injury. So what can you do in that situation to help Phil recover from something like that?
I suppose the best thing, first of all, is find out, you know what I mean, get a plan together, like, what is the injury, what, you know, what's the best path out of there. And a big thing I learned from working with some fantastic physios along the way is it's not about return to play, it's about, you know, return to high performance, right? So it's not about just getting back just a kind of you know, ready to kind of go again to train. You can do so much while you are injured, and you know, depending on what the injury is, but you can do so much to keep an athlete or a player fit and strong while you are injured. So bottom line is, when you have the plan, when you have an end date or a goal that you're reaching towards, don't give them a chance to think. So you kind of have to put distractions in there, you know. And one stage, I think we were training, you know, they weren't full long training sessions, but we were doing 3 sessions a day, you know, just to fill up the day, so Phil couldn't think too much about things, you know, because the mind is the worst bit during an injury, you know. The mind can play games on you and things like that. So you kind of have to, once you have the plan, you have an end goal, and then you have to put distractions along the way to kind of fill up the time, you know. So she actually came back that year. She was in unbelievable shape after 12 weeks, you know, and she made a final of a World Uni. So, like, it is doable. I think the worst thing you can do is just let it get to you, or accept it, oh, we're injured. And, you know, I think I see a lot more people now do push on, you know.
And then, of course, you know, working in the relay section with somebody like Phil, does she have to change the way she approaches running then, because now she's part of a team, and, you know, it's kind of a new sport that's come into the Olympics then, and fortunately Ireland reach an Olympic final and it goes really well. So how do you approach something like that?
Yeah, I suppose that was a bit of the curveball that we hadn't really planned for, I suppose, in Tokyo. You know, Phil was a big part of them qualifying for the Olympics, you know, along with Sophie Becker, another Wexford. Another, I suppose, Phil is not from Wexford, but I was thinking where she is.
We'll take her anyway, yeah.
We'll take her, yeah. So, yeah, look, Phil went to the Olympics, obviously qualified in the relay, which is phenomenal, then in the 200, 400. Now, the relay was always going to be first. And I suppose, look, there was always an outside chance of them making an Olympic final, but it was very, very outside. You know, yes, one run was probably going to do a little bit of damage to her individual event, but given she would have had 2 days off, to her 200, it was fine. But, you know, she's very fit and strong and adaptable, it would have been fine. And but we would have taken an Olympic final in the relay, that was the thing. Like, it wasn't, but when it came along, you're like, okay, change things slightly. So 100% you take the Olympic final all day long. It was Phil's best chance of ever making an Olympic final, but it doesn't negate the fact that, you know, one day off and you're back out there as an individual again, kind of running in the event that you've been training all your life for. So it was funny, she's probably the first athlete that's found herself in that situation, you know, just from a psychological perspective. Even how do you deal with the kind of the highs and the lows. So that was interesting, and it was something, you know, that we had to think on our feet. And even going into the last day, like, we knew the 200 she was very, very tired going into that, and then she had to tog out again the next day for the 400 heat, and we really didn't know if she was going to run till the end of the warm up, because we didn't know, you know. She turned around and said, I actually feel okay today, I feel good. And testament to the character of her, like, running her second fastest time ever, like, kind of a fourth race in 4 days, like, was huge, like, you know what I mean? It was unheard of, really. So, yeah, it was something that you just can't plan for, you know. It was, she's sort of the downside of her being so talented across the spectrum of events, is that you kind of end up becoming a cog in a lot of wheels, you know. And we don't have fully yet have the depth in the relay pool for her not to run, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
Next year going into World Championships in Oregon, it's a similar situation. So Phil is to qualify in an individual event, relay is still first. So it's just something we have to bear in mind, you know.
And is it something that we should focus more on, that we should create these relay athletes rather than just trying to fit, you know, the best runners we have onto teams?
100%. The culture needs to be built around relays. Like, you look at what Poland have done over the years. They've become, you know, a major power in relay running. They're everywhere. They build their individual programs around the relay programs, you know, and it's something that I've been a relay coach of the men's 4x1 team before, and it's something that I've always been a huge proponent of, you know. But it's to try and get the culture, the finance behind it, the right people, you know, the right coaches, I suppose. Like, it really is a people game. But we can be so, you know, we made an Olympic final in a sprint event, you know, unheard of, you know, mm-hmm. only, you know, people in the past like Darvels and, you know, Tommy Bars, we very rarely have, you know, the talent that can really aspire to sprint Olympic finals, you know. So yeah, coming together as a team is definitely something that we need to look at. And I do know they're trying. I don't know, you know, when it'll come to fruition, but we've kind of a launch pad now with a lot of talent coming through to really push on for that, you know.
You mentioned Sophie already. We spoke to her just before she went out to the Olympics, and she certainly flew the flag out there very proudly. And I know she's turning on lights in New Ross, I think, as well. So she's certainly become a bit of a celebrity. But what can you see in her running? Is there something more there that she can give and you know, really push on in her career now?
Yeah, 100%. Like, Sophie, I'd be very friendly with Sophie's coach, and we do a lot of we do a lot of training across, you know, with our two squads together. He's based up in Dublin, obviously, and down in Waterford. But we, you know, Sophie would drop in and train with Phil, you know, over the years. And I've definitely seen a similar progression in Sophie's career that I would have seen in Phil's. You know, very untapped resource, you know, but her progression is definitely, you know, it's an upward trajectory. And she's got that raw speed that Phil has as well, and she's just building the endurance on top of it. So, like, her leg in Tokyo was off the charts, you know. She'd had a kind of a fairly injured, you know, she'd a bit of an injury kind of coming into the outdoor season, and she got through that. And, you know, but like, to run 51 split out there, like, that's just world class, like, you know what I mean. And it was something that she hadn't done before, I suppose, that maybe Phil had as an individual. So, like, she really, really stepped up, as did everybody. But, like, Sophie really did bring another level in Tokyo when she was asked to, you know, which is shows that there's something in there, not just talent, like, that she has the mental aptitude as well to be dropped into an Olympic final. Because you have to remember as well, like, Phil was going into the Olympics she's worldly, like, she's been to a lot of major championships. She's mm-hmm. been running in senior majors since 2014 for Killian. Sophie and Chris that maybe have done one senior international. Now, maybe played into her hands that there wasn't a crowd there. Some people say that, look, you know, the crowd takes out, I suppose, the rabbit in the headlights. I'm not sure that would have impacted them either, but you know what I mean? It's still a big ask to drop three fairly inexperienced people into a relay, you know? So, yeah, look, they all came together. They were unbelievable. Like, it was just, it was fantastic at the time, you know? And it still is, looking back.
Something that we need to build on as well. I guess we have this kind of conversation every 4 years or that, you know, we all get very interested in the likes of athletics and hurdles and all that kind of stuff when the Olympics rolls around. And then, you know, as soon as we kind of forget about it, the level of interest, I guess, drops, you know, especially us here in the media, I suppose, and just the average sports fan. How can we, you know, get more involved in athletics and really kind of keep momentum up when we're not in an Olympic year?
Yeah, like, athletics is a funny one, because, like you said, every 4 years everybody switches on, and the expectations are that these athletes are superbly funded, nearly to the level like of, you know, Tadhg Furlong as a rugby player, right? That's not true, it doesn't happen. I have a day job. 99% of coaches in Ireland are similar, right? That we have day jobs and families and whatnot, and we're doing this because this is what we love doing, you know. There has to be some sort of professional funding for coaches, even if they are doing, you know, this as a part-time job, right? Because there's a huge commitment on us. And while it's fine, I've made it work and other people made it work, what's going to happen to the next generation of athletes and coaches who don't see this as something that they can commit to because, you know, time and family and things like that? So there's a huge, you know, somebody made a point to me before, it'd be like, what we do in athletics to be like, you know, the Irish rugby team not training until 7 o'clock at night because all the coaches and medical staff have day jobs and they can't train until evening time. So, you know, a lot of it is a money game, right? Rugby obviously brings in huge backing and sponsorship and things like that that athletics doesn't for 3 out of the 4 years, I suppose, of an Olympic cycle. So unfortunately, that's the way it is. It's a tough one. Like, there's no, I wouldn't say there's any model in the world that works, because you could bring in a hugely professional model and put a huge amount of money behind it, and that may not work either, because it boils down to the people. But I think, you know, there's a halfway house on this, where I think that there can be more support given to coaching. And also, I was glad to see that, you know, the carding was improved this year for international athletes. So that definitely helps. But I look at Phil, like, you know what I mean? The money that Phil is on as a professional full-time athlete is peanuts, right? So she, I was obviously very grateful to sponsors and WIT and things like that to kind of fill in the gaps there, to make it financially, make her feel sound like she's an uber-qualified student now at this stage, because she's just gone module after module and adding on masters when she can, just so she can stay as a professional athlete. So, like I said, it's multifaceted, but I think a lot of it does boil down to funding. It really does. Like, you know, it's to fund coaches to be able to give their time to these athletes, whether it's part-time or full-time. I think it's huge, you know, because any coaches I know that had Olympic athletes, I'd say 99% of them are doing other jobs, you know.
Absolutely, and that's why these changes that have been announced to the international carding scheme that you've already mentioned there, they have to be welcomed, I suppose. So that's got supports for retiring athletes, and, you know, it is an increase in funding for world-class level athletes, and there's the awards for 2 years and not just one. So this is a step in the right direction, but we haven't reached the sort of the end game yet.
No, and it was, in fairness, it was long overdue. You're dead right, it was very welcome. You know what I mean? I think, you know, just to pick one tier, say the international level athlete was a 12 grand carding, but it has been that for, I would say, 20 years. Like, so when we talk about salaries, people's salaries increasing to negate the effects of inflation, like, sporting carding hasn't ever progressed, you know. So it's definitely very welcome. Then I think, you know, the next spotlight in athletics, I think, has to be shone on what the best way of supporting coaches, because there's a lot of things that we do, not only just driving the training, do you know what I mean, but it's the, we go on camps, we go to competitions, like, you know, we do, you know, how do we even, you know, if we wanted to travel and meet another coach that offered a week's mentorship in Holland or something like that, like, that's all self-funded. So there's a lot of things that we put into it, you know, behind the scenes that, no, look, I wouldn't change it, but at the same time, that doesn't make it right, you know.